Radio News.
Hey, my name's Brent. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care coverage. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome. MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7. So if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE. 833-39-BIBLE.
Services were held on Capitol Hill today for the man known as America's pastor. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
Reverend Billy Graham became only the fourth civilian to lie in honor at the U.S. Capitol, with President Trump and scores of other political leaders, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, delivering remarks.
Billy Graham lifted up our nation, not because he occupied the spotlight so masterfully, but because he knew he wasn't the one who belonged in it.
I'm John Clemens.
Dick's Sporting Goods CEO Ed Stack told Good Morning America today that they will stop selling semi-automatic rifles and impose an age requirement to purchase any guns. Stack explains the move.
As we looked at what happened down in Parkland, and we were so disturbed and saddened by what happened, we felt we really needed to do something. And so we've decided not to sell these assault weapons any longer in any of our stores.
This is USA Radio News.
You know, I've been sleeping on a MyPillow now for 5 months, and I'm telling you, my sleep's improved dramatically. So what are you waiting for? When are you going to jump on board and start experiencing the kind of restorative sleep you need in your life? Are you waiting for a better offer? Well, your wait's over. If you go to MyPillow.com right now, you can take advantage of the MyPillow 4-pack offer. 2 premium pillows, 2 go-anywhere pillows, half off. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code USA, you get 50% off. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code USA.
The world record holder for Big Mac eating is set to break the 30,000 barrier, and he's vowed to continue scoffing down those Big Macs until the day he dies. Don Gorski is from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. He's a retired school teacher. He talks about how this whole Big Mac craze got started.
As soon as I got my first car, this is the first place I came to. I bought 3 Big Macs, ate them out there, enjoyed them so much, and I came back about 5 o'clock at night, bought 3 more. Ate them out there. Came back around 11 o'clock before they closed and ate 3 more. So the first day I came here, I ate 9 Big Macs. And it was like I couldn't get enough hamburger at that time, and Big Macs are so good. So I ate 265 in the first month.
Gorski also talks about how many Big Macs he eats on a daily basis now.
Usually it's 2 a day. Okay, now last year I ate 741 last year. Okay, well that's more than 2 a day. So that means there's days I ate 3, but that's because they're getting smaller. It's probably 90% of my solid diet is probably a Big Mac.
Worth noting, Gorski entered the Guinness Book of World Records last year after devouring his 28,788th Big Mac in front of judges, and Gorski says he hopes to reach 40,000 Big Macs. For all of these stories and more, please check out usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Well, that's enough talk of Big Macs. Right now, we have Destination Hockey on the 100 in Chamber Radio, the voice of business. But first, we have the weather. Today, it's a beautiful day. It is sunny with a little bit of clouds with a low of around 40, but right now it's around 60 degrees. Tomorrow night, we've got rain and rain all day, and then Friday we have rain. It's going to be a rainy weekend, so enjoy the weather today because after today it's going to be pretty bad weather. So that's it for the weather. We will be right back with a special guest today, so stay tuned.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar. I'm your host today, and we have a very special guest. We have Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, and he is one of the most exciting, exhilarating Islanders fans I've ever met, and I'm extremely honored to have the opportunity to interview him. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate greatly that you've invited me here. It's an honor to be on your show, and I hope I can enlighten you with some good information today.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I walked up to you at the game. You were one of the nicest people I've met, and, you know, it just, I'm so thankful you were able to, you know, you accepted the invitation, and I'm excited to talk about the Islanders and some of the things going on with them. So thank you.
Absolutely. It's my honor. Trust me. Been a big fan for a long time. So ask me some questions and I'll give you some good answers.
Okay, great. So for those of you, the listeners who are not familiar with Mr. Dowd, he is basically the New York Islanders version of Fireman Ed for the New York Jets, of Mr. Whammy of the New Jersey Nets, or the Brooklyn Nets now. And basically, he's the super fan. He's the Islanders' biggest fan, in my opinion, and basically everyone's opinion. You might humbly disagree, but you're the biggest Islanders fan. What's it like to be a super fan for the New York Islanders?
Well, to be honest with you, again, that's an honor, because to tell you the truth, I'm really just like anybody else who loves their team and is very passionate about them. But actually, there's a kind of an interesting story I'd like to share with you. And so, before the Islanders actually came into existence back in 1972, I was playing ice hockey out in Long Island in New Hyde Park, and I was on a hockey team, and two teammates that were introduced to me were Eddie Jockerman's sons, Mark and Steve. Eddie Jockerman was, of course, one of the wonderful goalies for the Rangers, along with Gilles Villemure, who won the Vezina Trophy back in 1969. And anyway, at that time, he came into the ice rink to teach me a few pointers. I was goalie. And I remember taking that experience and taking a drive home to my dad back to home and him asking me about my thoughts. And I said to him, I said, it wouldn't be great if we had a team on Long Island instead of Manhattan, so far away, and it's not really our team. And he said to me that he really thought that that was possible in the future. And I kind of looked at him with a question mark. And he said that he was doing some business. He was in the banking industry with a guy called William Shea. And William Shea, of course, was a big, prominent law firm attorney with Shea and Gold. And he was very instrumental in bringing the Mets into the baseball at in Queens, and also with the World's Fair. So he was actually, interestingly enough, was hired by Nassau County to persuade the NHL to bring a team to Nassau Coliseum, resulting in the New York Islanders. And that was back when Ralph Calcio was the county executive. So he gave me a little heads up that there might be some hockey on Long Island. And I was very hopeful but not sure about it, and had a little prayer session, and it came about. But I think I was a fan before they even got here.
That's terrific. You rarely see an inside source like that. Nowadays with Twitter and everything seems to be reported early. But hearing about that early must have been certainly exciting. That's really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so when you were a fan, you know, you've been a fan since their, you know, since their creation. What was your first game? What was the experience like? And just how did you grow so attached to the team?
So, feeding off that story I just told you, what had happened was the Islanders did get awarded the franchise along with the Atlantic Flames, which then eventually moved to Calgary, and back a couple of years after that. They didn't have very good success with their attendance and all. My first game was actually the one game of the preseason, which back then was an exhibition game. And it was September 27th versus the Rangers. And what I remember was sitting in the stands and having mostly Ranger fans and the New Island fans, which is on my side. It was an exciting game, first game at the Coliseum. Rangers won that game 6-4. And believe it or not, Billy Harris, which is the top draft pick for the Islanders, scored two goals that night. So that was my first experience going into Nassau Coliseum, 12 years old, 1972, brand new state-of-the-art building, all kinds of hope and, you know, possibilities with the team.
Yeah, there was a lot of positivity, a lot of hope. And one thing I'm sure you didn't have at your first game was something that you have grown famous for now, and that is something that makes you unique. Every super fan of all these sports has something that is their identifier, their special thing. And for you, it's your signs. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you grew into those and now you use them at every game and just how special that is for you?
So probably back in the late 90s, I started to become a season ticket holder again. And I remember my daughter and I have a couple of daughters, and one daughter in particular was really into the Islanders. And we used to talk about, you know, like at the games, how you'd be shouting and yelling and hollering and hooting and all this stuff. And she kind of looked at me and said, "Dad, the players can't hear you." And I looked at her, I said, "Yeah, I know." But she goes, "Why don't you just make a sign? They could probably see it." And all of a sudden, like a bright light went off. And I thought to myself, "Ooh, she's probably right." So we actually together started making signs. And we wanted to be positive because at the time the team was not very good. So we really wanted to be supportive because attendance was low. There was a lot of uncertainty about the arena back then, believe it or not, years ago. And the team was not actually in the best hands with ownership. And, of course, you know about John Spano, which came shortly after. So yeah. It was always about these positive signs that would inspire the players. And we kind of took off from there. So that was how we started back in probably, like I said, probably the late 90s, I'd say.
Yeah, and your signs, I've grown attached to them. Your Always Believe one is one that resonates with me because I'm a member of the Islanders social media. I have an Instagram account, a Twitter account, a website, and Islanders fans are extremely negative, so it's nice to have something, you know, change with you. You're very positive, and your Always Believe sign always shows up in the best of places. I was I posted on my Instagram, Drive for Five, and I posted a picture of John Tavares celebrating a goal, and in the top corner you can see your sign, and it's just so funny because your sign always pops up. There was another picture where, you know, Mike Bossy was getting introduced. There's your Bossy sign. You're always there with these positive messages, and you really find a way to, you know, make your presence known, which is really great.
Yes, thank you.
So with your signs, how many have you collected over the years? How many have you made, and where do you store them? Because you've really made a lot over the years.
Yeah, so my daughter and I started making them together, so she has a pile of her own, too. I should say a stack of them. And we have a basement down here. We're out in Long Island, so we're out in South Shore and Bay Shore. I have a nice little basement here, which is our little private area to make signs and kind of escape from the house, which gets very busy at times, as you probably know. And so we started making the signs back here, you know, back, like I said, late 90s. And we came up with one particular sign that was probably most influential, which is Always Believe. And then we kind of expanded on some ideas about, you know, supporting some of the players, and the players obviously have changed over the years, and certain guys weren't there. So we always tried to find one player in particular, or maybe just a few, that really kind of appreciated the support. So we would make a sign for them, and I'll tell you, it was amazing the response we got, because, you know, these guys were skating around the arena, and all of a sudden there's a name, their name on that sign that was supporting them and, you know, making them the kind of highlight of the visuals, and it was very successful. And in terms of storing them, so we basically have a spot. One is my daughter's, which is no longer making signs because she's in college, and my spot, which unfortunately has the signs have had to shrink because of the Barclays Center, which is a whole other conversation. But nevertheless, we've probably made, I'm going to say probably hundreds, and I still store them. I keep them kind of as a memorabilia. They're located in a nice little area. I'm actually sitting in my little office, if you will, now, basement. You know, it's been fun. I really enjoy doing this. It's just great to interact with other people and send a positive vibe out, because it's important to have that positive vibe.
Yeah, I posted a picture yesterday informing my followers that I would be interviewing you, and one person commented, and I just want to share this with you because it's exactly what you just said. His name is Hector. He works for Barclays Center, and he says he is one of the, I guess, greeters, ushers is the word, that is near one of your sections. And he commented, quote, "No matter how bad the team gets, you always have a positive outlook on the situation. He's a great guy." So just thank you for staying positive. It's really great. It's something we can all appreciate. So when we come back, we're going to talk about Barclays Center. As you said, we're going to talk about some other great things like your Dennis Potvin jersey and the John Tavares double overtime goal. So thank you so much for coming on again. And please stick with us for this short commercial break.
You got it.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. I'm here with a very special guest today, Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, who is the Islanders' biggest fan. And we've had some great talk about his experiences as an Islanders fan, how he started his fandom. And right now I just want to ask, you're a fan. I see you at the games. You get to walk down right next to the tunnel. You get to sit front row. What are some of the exclusive perks that have come with being a super fan?
Well, to be honest with you, it's an honor, again, to be having that title because I think a lot of people are super fans. Maybe my signs make me stand out a little bit more than some others. But I will tell you one thing. It's a good story, too, because when we went to Barclays, my ticket is actually on the ice over where the Islanders shoot twice, but it's not in an area where the tunnel is. And I'd always had, able to get down by the tunnel and put the signs up. It seemed like it was normal for that to be happening on a daily basis at the games, but for some reason the Barclays wouldn't allow it because I didn't have privileges to go down there, so it was kind of an odd situation for the first season, but I was accepting of it. But I will tell you, I did run into John Ledecky, who had a season ticket holder meet and greet for the in July of about 2 years ago for as many fans that wanted to come, and I believe there was about 1,000 there. And as he was doing his discussion about being the new owner, at the end, I went up to take a picture with him, and I had brought a sign for him because I wanted to welcome him to the Islander family. And he whispered on my ear, and he said, "How come you haven't been down by that tunnel? I haven't seen you." And I said, "Well, they won't let me." And he said, "Why?" I said, "I don't know. They just won't." So he was nice enough and gracious enough to take care of that situation, make arrangements, and give me that privilege of going up there by the board. So I guess that's a perk right there. But to be honest with you, it's just to give a good vibe and give some good inspiration to this team and to the fan base, who also needs it because they can, things are going good, things aren't going good, can turn on a dime like any sports team. When you're winning, things are good. When you're not, they're so-so. So to be able to kind of give that positive reinforcement on a daily basis, it's probably one of the best perks that I have personally.
Oh, yeah, it's great to have you with that positivity and seeing you next to the tunnel, always on TV, always right next to the fans for warm-ups when Josh Bailey throws out his pucks, which is one of my favorite parts about Barclays Center. Sure. I love that. So, yeah, it's really nice to see you. And I always see you in your Dennis Poppin jersey. Can you give a little insight into why you wear that number 5?
Well, so I think Dennis Poppin could be probably one of the top 5 defensemen in the NHL history. Some might argue that, but I think that's for sure. You can put him alongside of Barbie Orr. And, again, here's a guy that I grew up with. I watched him come into the league as a rookie and grow and eventually lift 4 Stanley Cups over his head. And so he became somewhat of a hero to me. And what I liked about Dennis Potvin was he was a no-nonsense guy who went out and played. When he played, he gave his heart. He gave his soul. And it was all about the effort. And he's just one of those guys that I personally have a admiration for. So with that being said, he's on the back of my jersey, game in and game out.
That's great. Most fans, I know I have a Tavares jersey, a Letty jersey, and a blank jersey with a lot of autographs. But for you to go to every game and wear the same jersey, that's really admirable. Most fans like to shake it up. So that really shows your love for Dennis Poppin. And he led the team. You know, he's kind of the underlying, like, hidden weapon almost. Fans think of Bossy, Trottier, even more of Butch Goring now that he's in the spotlight. But how did Dennis Poppin really lead the Islanders to the glory land? He was really the leader of that team.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so that's Dennis Poppin. And another Islanders legend is John Tavares. And John Tavares had a sensational double overtime goal against the Florida Panthers in the playoff series 2 years ago. And I just want to hear from you were there, I'm assuming. I was not. What was it like in person? And was that one of your favorite moments ever as
well,
an Islanders
absolutely.
Fan?
And I'll tell you why. There's a couple favorites, but I have to say, in most recent history, that probably is the one that stands out the most. And so what was so significant about that particular goal, game 6, and having gotten past the first round, they're playing Florida, and they're losing 1-0. But John Tavares finds a way to score a goal with about a minute left to tie the game, and the place went, and this is the one time Barclays actually went crazy, went berserk. And I'll tell you, it was just the most amazing feeling. So as you sat through that first overtime, and you watched, and it went back and forth, and then you said, okay, I have to use the bathroom. And then the second one came, and you're sitting there watching, and you're like, you know, I kind of got to eat something to eat. I didn't want to move. So I just sat there and just had my fingers crossed, and I just watched. And I was very fortunate. It happened to come right in front of me. I was on the goal line where the Islanders shoot twice, so it was really right in front of me. It was maybe 20 feet, 30 feet away from me, and I saw the whole thing. And I'll tell you, when he scored, it was probably about as joyous moment that I can remember in recent years. Honestly, I ran into some people that I've never met before on my way up from the celebration that I hugged and kissed, and it was a memorable night I will never forget.
Yeah, I referenced earlier, I can attest, you were close. Your sign is right there in every picture. The wraparound one where he's on his about to fall on his knees and he's right behind the goal, you can see your sign. It's really cool. So I can definitely attest you were there. And the atmosphere, the craziness about that, I just want to play a short clip. Chris King came on the show for our first episode, and he did the call for that, which is one of the greatest calls in Islanders history, in my opinion. And I just want to quickly go to that because it's worth listening to. It was one of the greatest moments in recent Islanders history.
Line at the red line to Oposo, right wing over the Florida line. Tavares, right circle, walks in, shoots Luongo the save, rebound, Tavares goes in and scores! John Tavares has won it in overtime! And yes, yes, yes! The Islanders have their first playoff series win in 23 years!
So that was the call on that goal, and boy, was it a historic night, and it was definitely one of my favorite moments. From the Cup
and
years.
You know what,
from,
David, it still gives me chills when I think about that, when I hear that.
Yeah, me too.
And I heard multiple play-by-plays of the goal, and Chris King's by far was the most chilling.
Oh, yeah. Chris King came on the show. He talked about it's people's ringtones. It's he comes up, people hug him, they thank him for that call. that really culminated as the moment that Islanders fans were waiting for. And I think Chris King, he did it wonders. He really, really did a great job with that call. And it showed one of the best moments in Islanders history. And now I want to just talk about some other great moments. What were some of your other favorite times in Islanders history?
Well, so as you know, over the Islanders history, there's been quite a few. Mm-hmm. You can always start with the John Tinelli goal. But I would say a few of my favorites personally. And this is a very interesting one because a lot of people, I kind of let this one slip through. So this is back in 81-82, and the Islanders are playing Pittsburgh, and they're down by two goals. And it's best of five. They lose. They don't continue their dynasty because they're out. So a gentleman and a very underrated guy who I'm so glad he got some recognition, and that was, again, by the work of John Ledecky for getting him to come. It's been many years since he's had a little bit of a fallout with the franchise for whatever reasons, but bygones be bygones. He was there the other night. So John Tinelli, back in 81-82, and they're 5 minutes away from elimination from Pittsburgh, down 3-1. So what does John do? He makes an assist. I think it's to Mike Ewan, and then scores a goal with about 2 minutes left and then goes into overtime to win it, and the Islanders advance. And one of the most underrated players on that championship team that a lot of people, for some reason, I'm not quite sure, just kind of got set aside by the glorious recognition that we're given to the other guys. And real quick, David, I ask you a trivia question. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, God.
But there was a nickname that he had that the players gave him back in those dynasty years. Do you have any clue what it might be?
John Tinelli's nickname?
John Tinelli had a nickname.
Now,
I'm not putting you on the spot because I'm guarantee you most people would know it. The only reason I know this is somebody ran it by me the other day and they did some research. So I have a cheat sheet in front of me.
Mr. Clutch.
What you would think.
Yeah.
It's a trick question, so I'm sorry I kind of duped you here. He was called the Greasy Jet.
Ooh,
all right?
That's a good one.
Yes, the Greasy Jet. That was a nickname he had during those dynasty years that not many people know about. So John Tinelli and that goal in particular was a classic moment that I remember. Let's go back to April 10th, 1984, and the Islanders had already won a couple cups, and they were playing the Rangers. And, of course, Kenny Morrow's overtime goal against them, in the drive for five, was key to get them into that series, which they eventually lost. And then you have Sean Bates' penalty shot back against Toronto. Mm-hmm. And that was a big one because the Coliseum was actually rocking again after a couple of lifeless years. And Sean Bates scored that goal at about 2 minutes and 30 seconds against Curtis Joseph. And they went on to lose that series, but that was a moment that I will never forget either. So there's quite a few, and those are some I can share.
Yeah, those were all great ones. The Bates one definitely, comes into memory. That was a great one. But all those moments happened when the Islanders were playing at Nassau Coliseum, and the Islanders arena situation right now is certainly crazy. We talked to Jim Bombach, and we talked to Neil Best, who were two Newsday writers. I'm not sure if you interacted with them in your interview that you had with Newsday a few years back.
I actually, by chance, happened to listen to radio interviews with them, and was delighted to hear that what they had to say.
Oh, that's great! Thank you. I'm honored that you listened. Mm-hmm. And Jim Bombach was this was the funniest thing by far. One of the most comical aspects of the show so far was interviewing Neil Best and Jim Bombach in back-to-back weeks, and Jim Bombach just saying that, "Oh, I love covering the Islanders. I love covering the arena." And then Neil Best going, "Thank God we have Bombach. I hate covering the Islanders. I hate covering the arena." He didn't say, "I hate covering the Islanders," but he specifically said,
two
"I hate covering the arena."
Personalities, and interesting to have both of them on to get their different perspectives.
Yeah, the perspective was night and day. And Neil Best loves covering the Islanders, whatever Newsday gives him, but he hated the arena situation. He was adamant about that. And right now, it's craziness. And how is the arena, the atmosphere at Barclays Center, different than Nassau Coliseum from what you've seen?
Oh, it's night and day, and there's a couple of reasons for that. It's not built for hockey, number one. It's in Brooklyn. It's a hike for most Islander fans to make, most of the fan base. I think it's about, I forget the statistics, maybe 71% of the fan base or something of that sort resides on Long Island. So let's put it this way. I take a train from Babylon, and It's not a terrible train. The change in Jamaica is always a hassle. But I can make these games, and I'm fortunate enough to do so. But I know some friends and some people that I've associated with that live a little further out. I just can't do it. All right? So that's a big problem, the distance. The Barclays Center, again, and I will say this. At first, when we first got there, it wasn't quite accommodating to the fan base. They made some changes, made some good adjustments, and they've kind of reconciled that. But truthfully, again, it's not a terrible arena. It's clean. There's plenty of bathrooms. The food choices are great. The people have actually become, the work there have been very, 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 very lovely and very nice, and not a bad word to say about them. But it's not for hockey. Most of those seats that you sit in, I'll give an example. The seat I sit in right by the ice on the goal line, literally right behind the photographers. I'm right there. You go up two seats behind me, and you start missing, you know, different areas of the arena. So, and that varies throughout. So Barclays has been a rough ride, I have to tell you. If this is what I had to live with, I could deal with it. But in a real, you know, great world and a sunny day, it's not the right solution.
Yeah, I've been to a lot of Barclays Center games. I have an interesting perspective on it. I loved it. It was my first time there. I had a wonderful experience. Islanders came back in overtime and won. I went to the bathroom, and I just am like, oh, my God, am I in a hotel? Like, I loved it. I loved the food. It was great.
Yeah.
But now right. that I'm doing this more and more, now that I'm, you know, talking, I met you at the game, now that I'm almost there, not yes. on business, but now that I'm going there more often, I mean, I have to take a train. If it's a 7 o'clock game, my train for that Red Wings game, which I want to discuss in a minute, that was a fabulous
one.
Game. Oh my God. But that train, I had to leave at 3:23. I got to Newark at 4:23. I had to transfer from Newark, go to Penn. I had to then get on the subway, the 2 and 3 line, which is a nice direct line.
Yes, I know it
is it's never working correctly. So then you gotta take a go the wrong way, then take the 4. It's unbelievable this trip you need to take, and it usually winds up being 3.5 hours for me. And say what you want, it's worth it. I will do this trip every day if I have to. But it is. I mean, when I get home at night after, you know, being gone from 3 to 2 a.m., it's like I'm exhausted, and it's a crazy trip. And I know you transferring to Jamaica.
No, listen, and crazy. David, you're absolutely right about that, and that is part of the big problem at the Barclays Center. And you put yourself in the category of being a super fan by doing what you just mentioned, as a lot of people are, so they're all super fans in some ways. But no, the Barclays, again, you know, real quick, it's not a place for hockey. You know, it has some amenities, but ultimately it's not the Islanders' home, and that's not where they belong.
Yes, I completely agree. I'm excited for the situation next year, although there is going to be a slight issue with that, and that is Brett Yormark, the Islanders still playing at Barclays Center. And I want to play some comments from Brett Yormark. For those of you who are not aware, Brett Yormark is the CEO of Barclays Center, and he has been an enemy, you know, right behind Garth Snow. He seems to be public enemy number two for the Islanders. And his comments really made me upset. Garth Snow, whatever. He can do what he wants. He'll continue to disappoint me. But that's Garth Snow. Brett Yormark, what he said 2 days ago was actually hurtful. And I want to take the moment to play his comments now.
Brett, let me ask you this. What did happen with the Islanders and the long-term deal that was in place at Barclays Center? What went wrong?
Unfortunately, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, we had great hopes that, you know, moving the Islanders to Brooklyn would work. Unfortunately, they were like a rent-a team. This mm-hmm. team never really embraced Brooklyn, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Their fan base resides in Long Island. They have a great, avid fan base in Long Island. Brooklyn just didn't gravitate to the team as I had hoped they would. Mm. But I think the move next year, where they're playing 12 games back in Long Island, and after next year we'll probably play half the schedule, if not more,
wow.
is a step in the right direction. Obviously, they're looking to build their own venue. Not sure that ever happens, but if it does, I wish them well. But in the interim, our goal was to bring them back to Long Island, have them play as many games as they can at NYCB Live,
and
that's happening. So I'm excited about it.
Brett, so much going on. You got.
First of all, I feel like I'm going to punch this microphone in front of me, but he called them a rented team. He said they never embraced Brooklyn, which I think they tried their hardest. He also said, which is important to note out, and Jim Bombach confirmed this, he said the Islanders are going to look to play at least half their games at the Coliseum. in 2 years. Right now the deal is for half their games. So Jim Bombeck said this deal could be changing. The Islanders deal right now is 12 games next year and then half the next two seasons. There's a chance it changes where the Islanders could be playing a full season at Nassau Coliseum. Bombeck has said it, and Yarmark just hinted at it. And also just the way he talks, he puts down the fan base that just tried to love Brooklyn so much. So how do you feel about his comments? And being one of the Islanders' biggest fans, were you personally hurt by what he said?
That's a great question, and I have a very good answer. And the first thing I can tell you, and I have a couple of points I'd like to get to. Number one, that's a dagger in every Islander's heart. Any fan who is an Islander fan knows the sacrifice we've all made to come to Brooklyn to make those changes, to root for our team. Great sacrifice, great amount of time, great finances, a ton of things. And, I like to try to stay positive, but when things are put in front of you and you don't see much positive, you have to be truthful. And I can be truthful by saying that was very unprofessional, certainly very hurtful. And I also think there's a personal motive there because what's going to happen here, and I'll be truthful with you, Dave, this is my personal opinion, but I think I'm pretty accurate about this, and most people will share the same thoughts. So what you have happening here is Belmont's going to be built, and it will, trust me, and that's going to take away business in the Coliseum. Right now, as anybody knows, if you go on their website, they have the Long Island Nets playing there. They average maybe 2,000 fans a game at best, and a lot of those tickets are giveaways. Disney on Ice, maybe a few prime concerts with Billy Joel and some other prominent people, but nevertheless, mostly monster shows and things that are not really bringing much revenue into the Coliseum. So what they thought they were going to do when they built this and renovated, I should say, hasn't really come to fruition. And I think, being owners of both arenas there, Belmont's a threat. And they didn't make it work at Barclays financially. And so they were hoping to bring them back to the Coliseum and try to make that work. And that's not happening so much in the next 3 years as they hoped. And I think it's just sour grapes, bottom line. Sorry to say, but bad comment, dagger in the Islander hearts, not a good thing to say. People don't like them. Not going to like them anymore.
Yeah, he actually managed to distract the all-out war that was being thrown at Garth Snow, and fans actually started talking about Brett Yormark more than Snow because those comments were, and then the most annoying thing, you just hit it on the head right there.
Oh, terrible.
Was just
Listen,
the fact that he's...
I don't mean to jump in on here, but I'm going to say this. It was very unprofessional, and it was a dagger in the Islanders' hearts. Those were the two best ways to describe his actions.
Yeah, he's clearly threatened. He's clearly not happy with Belmont Park coming in. And for him to say, we don't even know if Belmont Park is happening, you do know, and it's going to happen. They're going to be finally, they're going to have their own arena, state-of-the-art, unlike Barclays Center. Barclays might be state-of-the-art for basketball, I guess, barely. But Belmont Park's coming, and Brett Yormark better be scared because it's gonna be coming in full force. And the Coliseum, in the meantime, that's going to be the buffer. It's this arena situation has certainly will affect you. You're going to be, I'm sure you're going to be waiting for that schedule to come out to find out what's happening. Are you going to be going to Barclays on a Friday night? Are you going to be going to the Coliseum? What's going to happen? No one knows. I hope they split the schedule into like even increments kind of. That's probably not going to happen, but that would be my goal, especially if they're splitting it halfway, half the season at Barclays, half the season at the Coliseum. I'm very concerned that the Coliseum's going to be a sellout. Barclays is going to have no one going to the game. That's my concern. Right. But I just want to ask, how excited are you for the Islanders to come back to the Coliseum, and will that affect your view of Barclays? Are you still going to go to games at Barclays, and will you be as excited to see an Islanders game in Brooklyn as you would be at the Coliseum?
So first part of the question is, obviously I'm going to attend both the venues. It's a Shrek to get into to Barclays, and there's no doubt, but I'm going to be there regardless. So I'll finish that commitment out there, and after 3 years, hopefully, if all things work out, I can say thank you and kind of just put that in the past. So in terms of the Coliseum moving forward, next year with, say 13 games or whatever they're going to have there, I'm going to think from a practical point of view, that they'll play a lot of those weekend games there, which will attract quite a few people because they'll be able to sell it out. They'll probably, in my opinion, put probably lesser teams in those games only because they want to get the attendance at Barclays and keep it sort of lucrative. So they'll probably put the Rangers, Barclays, and Flyers and some of the local teams who are going to attract a lot of people where you know they're going to sell the Coliseum out on the weekends. If that's the case, of course, that's unknown. So for me, it's kind of a blessing. So it's 13 less train rides. 13 more tailgates
at
the Coliseum, which is quite of a welcome opportunity now that I've had, say, 3 years at Barclays taking a train. And again, as you shared earlier with the subways, I've had a few problems getting into Atlantic Terminal. So the train went right to Penn Station and then right into the 2 and 3, and that was a whole other story for another day. So Coliseum is very welcome. No problem scheduling the two in terms of the season. I'll be at all. Coliseum, obviously, my favorite place to go, so I'm in there.
And I thank you for that. We appreciate that fans like you are going to check it out. I'm going to check it out, and hopefully the fans that can. And I stress this because some fans would die to go to a game at Barclays Center, and they could get the cheap ticket. Tickets aren't that much money. Barclays Center is known for being very cheap, but they just don't have the time. They don't have – it's dangerous to go into, the trip that we make. I've run into some close calls, and it's really just not the ideal situation. So I think Nassau Coliseum will be welcome. But before we head to commercial break, I want to ask you the golden question. You're going to have Elmont coming in 3 years, and the Islanders are going to be back at the Coliseum in that time. There's going to be some past memories that are going to be brought up. There's going to be some good times made in those 3 years. And it's going to be hard to move on to Elmont. Well, I think fans will get over it and embrace their new arena. It's going to be tough. So I just want to ask you, between the two, Coliseum or Belmont Park, which is your preference?
Well, being realistic, obviously, the Coliseum, as we all know, we love the Coliseum. It was our first girlfriend. It was our first home, our first bike we rode, the whole bit. Problem is that it's just not viable to support a hockey team with the amenities that are needed these days. So with that practical mindset being in place, Belmont is just this fantastic outlook that seems has so much potential, so much potential. So you can start with a few things. A, you have multiple availability to get to the game, train, buses, you can drive. It's going to be a destination. The Coliseum's not a destination. It's a parking lot, and there's Borelli's, which I absolutely love on Hempstead Turnpike, by the way, and there's the Long Island Marriott. So there's not much going on there for the amenities that the fan would like to have, especially if you brought your wife and kids and all that. So Belmont's going to offer all those amenities. It's going to be a state-of-the-art arena that is built for Islanders and Islanders only. Coliseum was built sort of for a bunch of venues, so that's positive for Belmont. And it's going to be done right. I praise John Ledecky. I'll say this again and again and again. He has been the best thing that's happened to the Islanders, along with Scott Malkin. He's just a little bit more of a silent type of partner, if you will. John Ledecky's more the face that of ownership that you see. He's been a nice guy. He's invited me to some of these press conferences, so I've sat and listened, so I've got a little more information than some other people might. Belmont sounds like a wonderful, wonderful situation for Island fans. A little further away, a little further west, but, and all the fans are not on Long Island. Most of them are, but there are quite a few that come from Westchester and, outlying areas. So that'll give everybody an opportunity to come see them, and it'll be great places to go. As a matter of fact, maybe my wife will want to come more often because there'll be some amenities around the arena that are modern amenities, such as nice restaurants and nice places to go to, say, have a cocktail of sorts. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm so excited. Belmont's going to be one of the best things that's happened to the Islander franchise.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm super excited for it. I definitely want to get over there when I can. But right now, we're going to have to take another commercial break. It's been great to talk to you so far. When we come back, we have some talk about Anders Lee, Garth Snow, the most hated man in Brooklyn, and also some of the new trade deadline acquisitions. So please stay tuned to Destination Hockey on the 100 in Chamber Radio, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Positivity. It is something that Patrick Dowd and myself and other Islanders fans try to hold on to, but sometimes it's hard. And in the past, you've made signs, some of your famous signs, making statements, trying to push some positivity across the fan base. One of my favorites, it's one of the more underrated ones, but I love the Anders Lee for Rookie of the Year sign. You really tried to get across the idea that Lee was, you know, making an impact for the Islanders, and I think he deserved Rookie of the Year. But recently, talking about statements, our fellow Islanders fans have started a movement of their own, and it has really taken the NHL by storm. NBC, The Score, New York Times, just everyone is talking about this movement, and it is the Snow Must Go movement. It's becoming a rallying call amongst Islanders fans. Billboards, shirts, and even rally towels that I know one of my friends is selling. They're really, you know, they're taking the fan base over, really. And I just want to ask you, what are your thoughts on this extremely negative movement?
So, obviously, you're talking to a guy who doesn't favor this sort of mentality. And, again, I do understand the frustration of Islander fans. So, in all fairness, I can relate to that. I'm on board with that whole kind of we want to win, we need to make some changes. But ultimately, putting up billboards, casting negativity, trying to form a, say, mob-like mutiny in to steer the ship in a different direction really is not productive and not going to be very beneficial down the road. So I don't like it against it. Again, I do share the frustration of Island fans, in all fairness. Everybody wants to win. But, you know, if you look at a couple of things here that maybe are very instrumental in this whole equation. Nobody likes how Garth Snow got here. And I listened to your show last week, and you brought up some good points about being a backup goalie, and we all know the history. But moving forward, here's where we are. And where we are is we have a captain who more than likely will sign with the team. It's unknown, but I think it will happen. We have a team that's got some just unbelievable talented players around him. We have some weak holes that we need to work on. But we've got a guy like Matt Barzal, who is just on the cusp of being, you know, great. So, you know, the negativity being cast with Garth Snow is unproductive, unbeneficial, and basically of no value.
Yeah, you really said it there. I talked on the show last week about it, and I'm very angry about how some of the things happen. I'm perhaps most angry about the secret contract extension, aka the blood oath, as I call it, where Garth Snow has a contract that no one knows about. It was a parting gift from Charles Wang, and it's really a 1984 Robert Orwell esque situation where it makes it difficult for John Ledecky and Scott Malkin to fire him. We don't even know how much he's owed. I've heard rumors from credible sources on Twitter. Nothing's credible on Twitter, but these were, you know, they have the check mark next to them, so maybe they're credible. But they said the contract is one of the highest in the NHL, you know, millions of dollars per year. And there are circumstances as fans that we do not know about. And this movement, and this is concerning, but this movement has the potential to affect things that we do not want to affect. And I just want to discuss the movement centered around hatred and negativity. It can be detrimental. It can affect a John Tavares situation. It could have affected a Josh Bailey situation. For Josh to re-sign in the middle of that, good for him. But can this be something fans unite around? Can it be detrimental? Or could it really, really have lasting impacts on this team and ownership?
So I think the answer will kind of lie as the season progresses. So, for instance, we're, say, 4 points out tonight or something of that sort, you know, win here and a loss there and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not all about making the playoffs. It's really about, you know, and again, and I'll just kind of backtrack here a little bit to answer your question. So if you were an Islander fan and before the season started and you got into this whole Garth Snow thing and, you know, Tavares going to sign and all, your biggest question was, are the Islanders going to get a new arena? Are they going to stay in New York? Are they going to move? And all this, you know, hypothetical stuff. So that question was answered. Yes, they are. They're going to be on Long Island, back on Long Island, and in New York forever. So that's number one question that's most important answered. Second was, well, what are they going to do in the meantime? Where are they going to play? Blah, blah, blah. So that question was answered. Part of the games at the National Coliseum, part of Barclays, and then hopefully maybe more of the games at the Coliseum as we go in the next year or two, depending on the situation. So two big questions answered, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, the next one is, why haven't we made trades at the deadline? Okay? Obviously, Garth Snow, and again, you know, in all fairness, his resume doesn't speak well for him, but he has made some good moves, and so that's some things we can hit on that another time. But the bottom line is, there's just a few points out. And, you know, you get into the playoffs, who knows what can happen. L.A. Kings, years ago, stumbled in the last game of the season, ended up winning a couple Stanley Cups. So a lot can happen. So really what I'm getting at is the unknown that hasn't happened yet is really just dividends paid on worries that haven't occurred. So, you know, this whole thing with billboards, I get the frustration. I don't think it's a positive thing. Will it affect John Tavares? He's a professional. I don't think it will.
That's great. Good to hear. And John Tavares, the most popular, I don't even know why people want to know this, but they must seem to think you have an eight ball over there. But the most popular question I got from my fans and followers was they thought you had some sort of insight onto the John Tavares signing. I think I know the answer to this already. You have said it. You've hinted at it various times throughout the show. You think John Tavares is going to re-sign with this team? You think he's going to be the captain for the next 8 years? I think you can agree with that statement, right?
Well, absolutely. And a couple of the you know, key questions that were being asked were, were they going to get the new arena? Where was John going to play? Was John going to Shrek into Brooklyn? Was he going to play close to home? Was he going to have a new state-of-the-art place? Was the ownership going to pull any kind of resources and finances to better the team? Obviously, they are. Maybe there's subtle moves. Maybe people don't see the big one yet. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about the reality of it, John Tavares has had a couple of those key questions already answered for him. So my gut feeling tells me we're in a good place and we just have to be patient.
Yeah, speaking of good place, fans were very reactive. They were not happy with the trade deadline. But Garth Snow, I'm not happy with it either. I think they should have done more. But the two moves Garth Snow did make, acquiring a solid young defensive anchor in Brandon Davidson for a third-round pick from Edmonton. Edmonton Oilers fans were in outrage over this deal. That Davidson was one of their best defenders this season. Davidson's going to make an impact. And then this, I have no idea how this happened, but the getting rid of Jason Chimera, saving $1.5 million of cap and getting Chris Wagner, who has a 54% save percentage, face-off winning percentage. He's a hitter, second in the NHL in hits, and he's really he's like Matt Martin, but and I love Matt Martin. I will die for Matt Martin, but he's almost better than Matt Martin. He's really good. And these two moves, how do you think they're going to impact the team on the ice this year?
Well, I think any Islander fan wants to see some better results at the trade deadline, some more of an impactful move, such as a key defenseman and maybe some other moves, perhaps another goalie. The bottom line is, you know, when you're dealing with other general managers, their price that they're asking may not be realistic. And I believe that a lot of teams know the Islanders are desperate. They know the situation with John Tavares. I think that they're putting up the highest number they can put in for a return. And again, you know, whether you like Gar Snow or not, and that's a personal opinion, I do like him, so, you know, I'll say that. And I think he is being cautious. He likes the team. He believes in the team. So I would like to maybe have seen personally a more impactful trade deadline, but maybe that's just sort of a, you know, a message to the players that we believe in what you have. We believe in what we are. Now, also, you have to keep in mind, this is very instrumental, too. The players that they have upcoming in the, you know, lower levels are just on the cusp of greatness. I mean, it was like Barzal just came in, this Ross Johnson. That's just to speak of a few. I can go on and on. So those guys are on the cusp of greatness. And you have a couple of first-round picks next year, and it's supposed to be a very good class of drafts. You really, you know, I get it. You know, maybe we don't make the playoffs. Maybe we're a little bit upset. We want to make trades. Maybe in the long run, it's a better move. So, got to sit tight on this one and see what happens.
Yep, Islanders 4 points out of a playoff spot right now. They have a crucial home-and-home with Montreal. Wednesday is today. They have a game at 7 p.m. in Montreal, and they're coming home for the first time before they head off to the Pacific trip, a game I'm sure you will be at, big game on Friday night. And it's going to be a big one. Islanders need to win, and I hate every year we get into this. I don't know. It's like a corner, but every year we get into this corner where we start saying every game is a must win. Up tonight's a must win. Tonight's a must win, and I hate it because they should be in a position where they have a cushion. But right now, it's a must win every game. They need to go 12-5-3 if they want to get 90 points, which is a 49% chance of the playoffs, according to analytics. They need to go
on
a tear.
Which is not terrible.
Yeah.
So let me add to this real quickly, David, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So, again, you have to think about the reality here. The percentages are that most, a little less than half the teams make the playoffs, and as you said, some 49% statistically. Those are not bad odds. Worst case scenario, they didn't make the playoffs, okay? All right, that would stink. You know, I don't know if they're really going to go far if they did make the playoffs, truthfully.
Yeah, Tampa.
Of course, there's always hope. So, I mean, you know, in the long run, again, think about the positives here and backtrack. You got Belmont Arena. The Islanders are not leaving New York. They're not going to Kansas City, not going to Quebec. They're going to play at the Coliseum again. More than likely, Tavares will sign, unknown, we don't know. Trade deadline, okay, subpar, nobody's really happy. But bottom line is they're on the cusp of a playoff hunt, and they have the ability to make the playoffs if things all work out. So why don't we just take each day as it goes, appreciate the team we love, root for them, support them, be there for them, and you know what? They make the playoffs. Man, who knows what can happen? Look at John Tavares, 2-overtime goal a couple years ago.
Yep. Well, I have a whole page of notes that I wanted to ask you about, especially that Friday game where I met you, the Detroit game. I'd love to have you on in the future to continue to talk about the Islanders. It was a honor to talk to you. You were amazing to, you know, get to share some information, some knowledge with. And I just want to thank you so much for giving up your Wednesday night. And I hope the Islanders get a big win tonight in Montreal.
Well, I want to say thank you kindly. And the honor is actually mine. And I do hope you have me on again because I like to share a lot with you guys. Again, I really am very happy for you. David, you're moving in the right direction.